Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope that you did have a good weekend. Hope that you, your family, your friends, everyone in your world is staying strong and staying healthy right now. And yes, those Major League Baseball playoffs have even had me watching baseball. And you know, I don't really care that much about baseball. But we have now reached the League Championship Series. And hey, they are really, really interesting right now. In the American League, the Cleveland Guardians are facing the New York Yankees. And you know, it's a really interesting matchup. When you think to maybe great fights, a lot of times it's great styles. A lot of times it's differing styles. And that's what we have here because we have clashing styles. The New York Yankees crush the long ball. They hit home runs. They have a very solid pitching staff. That bullpen is getting better. With that lineup, I mean, how can they not just smash the ball? Giancarlo Stanton has been red hot. Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, they are stacked. And then you have the Cleveland Guardians who just kind of manufacture scoring with base hits and a really good pitching staff and a really good bullpen. And maybe that will be good enough. Well, it wasn't in game one. Soto and Stanton were just too much for the Guardians, and the Yanks cruised to a 5-2 win. On Tuesday, well, it kind of looked very similar. The Yankees are just so dangerous, and now they take a 2-0 lead, and it really does. It feels like they might be in control here. We'll see if that continues. The Yankees should be the stronger team, right? But now it does go back to Cleveland, and those fans should be absolutely insane. Over in the National League, the Los Angeles Dodgers crushed the New York Mets 9-0 in their first game. Okay, well, let the overreactions begin because this series won't be close. The Dodgers have too stacked of a lineup. They have too much good starting pitching. They have a better bullpen. They have way better hitters. This is going to be a really short series. And then game two began. And you know, I told you last week, the New York Mets are just so hard to predict from 1 minute to the next. And sure enough, they come out in game two. They jump on the Dodgers from the start behind Francisco Lindor. And then, of course, Mark Vientos hits that grand slam. The Mets score 6 in the first 2 innings. And I know their bullpen might not be great, but when Edwin Diaz is closing, sometimes he's enough. The Mets get a 7-3 win, and they split the first 2 games, which again is kind of all you can ask for. Now, this should be the Dodgers advancing, right? The Dodgers are loaded. And yet, I just can't quite count out the Mets. They are so dangerous. Hey, I'll be honest. I can't wait for games 3 and 4. This postseason has been highly interesting, as usual. The regular season, yes, it's really, really long. It's really, really dry. And then that postseason hits, suddenly baseball gets very, very interesting. Hey, today on The Dose, we are going to be taking a brief look at the world of football, as we tend to do. But we are going to be looking more specifically at the teams that were kind of expected to be contenders. And yet they've had a little bit of a blip on their radar. They've had a little bit of a stumble. Should they be panicking yet? Or do they just need to relax? Things are going to eventually improve. We will check in on both college football and the NFL, and we will have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you as well right now in those MLB playoffs. Yes, we have both number one seeds still remaining, along with a number 2 and a number 6 seed. But in the MLB playoffs, does being a top seed really even matter? We're going to look at that in just a few minutes. But first, we do have a little bit of news to discuss because in the NFL, we had a couple of trades take place on Tuesday. The Buffalo Bills made a trade with the Cleveland Browns for wide receiver Amari Cooper. They want to beef up that receiving core a little bit for Josh Allen. And I think we all know the Dallas Cowboys clearly don't need any kind of help. So why would they be involved in either of these deals? And then the New York Jets finalized a blockbuster trade for star wide receiver Davante Adams. Now, they say the Raiders will get a conditional third-round pick that could bump up to a second-round pick if Adams, you know, plays well. But we know, hey, the Jets have been kind of in this mode of win now. When they went and got Aaron Rodgers, no, they pushed all their chips into the middle. But right now, they're on a three-game losing streak at 2-4. They fire their head coach, and now they bring in Davante Adams, who should give Rodgers another receiving target and, don't underestimate this, another target for him to blame in the post-game press conferences. Here's a question. Why hasn't Davante been playing for the Raiders? Was he hurt? Was he injured? Or did he just not like his team? Because he didn't seem to be injured. Or if he was, he has suddenly been miraculously healed. But here's another question that I have concerning Davante Adams. Can he find a house in New York that already has a Taco Bell in it? Because that's what he has in Vegas. I don't know. I just went house shopping, you know, not that long ago. We just moved. I can tell you this. I didn't see one single house with a Taco Bell already built inside of it. It's not an easy thing to find. Diarrhea doesn't just grow on trees, kids. That's what I'm saying. You know, somewhere, Robert Saleh is like, oh, now you trade for him? Where was that when I was still on staff? Now you go get him? Thanks a lot. Let's move over to the world of college football, where we got some bad news because it sounds like Utah quarterback Cam Rising is out for the season with a lower leg injury. And Coach Kyle Whittingham said on Monday that freshman Isaac Wilson will now be Utah's starter until further notice. Rising was injured in Utah's 27-19 loss to Arizona State this past Friday. It's kind of a surprising loss. And his leg was bent backwards at a really awkward angle following a hit on Utah's first drive. But the seventh-year senior finished out the game. But you could tell it bothered him. He struggled with his mobility. He struggled with his accuracy. He only completed 43% of his passes. He threw three interceptions against Arizona State. And, you know, Rising, he's already missed three games this year because of an injury to his hand. But he sat out all last season because of a major knee injury that he had in the 2023 Rose Bowl. Now he's out again. And when I say this, you're gonna think I'm joking, but I'm not, because of this injury. Cam Rising, a seventh-year senior. I think he's 47, 48. I don't know how old he is. He's old. He's now eligible to request an eighth year of eligibility. Is this what we're doing, really? Is this what college sports is? Let's give a kid an eighth year of eligibility when there's a million, you know, 18-year-olds coming out wanting to play. Come on, bro. Come on, Uncle Rico. It's time.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
You need a desk job with like an Excel spreadsheet in front of you. It is past time. You need to start selling Tupperware out of a van already. Come on, Cam, do the right thing. So this week on The Dose, we are looking across the football landscape, and more importantly, we're looking at the teams that have not quite met expectations. Maybe they have started a little slower than expected, or maybe they've had a big loss already. Well, here's the question today. Should these teams panic, or do they just need to relax and everything will eventually be fine? Let's start off in college football, and let's start off with the Ohio State Buckeyes, who have been cruising through their season. They've been blowing out terrible teams until Saturday when they went to Eugene, Oregon, to face the number 3 Oregon Ducks, and things were, again, rolling along very well for Ohio State. They had a fourth quarter lead, and even when Oregon took a 2-point lead with under 6 minutes to play, who cares? Ohio State was still in prime position. They're still going to win the game. They had driven to the Oregon 28-yard line. A field goal can win this game, but then they had a penalty, And then quarterback Will Howard had a temporary loss of his senses, I guess. He scrambled and ran. He kind of pulled a Dak Prescott, and the clock ran out. And the Buckeyes, who still had a timeout in their pocket, I might add, lost the game while in field goal range. So, should Ohio State panic? I'm going to say right now, no. But there are concerns. Because that defense gave up way too many big plays. And we have seen Ohio State get pushed around a little up front in the past three or four seasons, not just this year. And that happened again on Saturday. I mean, Oregon averaged 5 yards per rushing attempt. But here is a problem for Ohio State. You still have number 3 Penn State, number 16 Indiana, and number 24 Michigan coming. Don't panic yet, because if you beat those teams, you're fine. Even if you lose just one of those games, you're probably still getting into the playoff. But you had better learn from this loss, and you had better learn quickly. Let's head down to the SEC, though, where the Alabama Crimson Tide, after coming off of that loss to Vanderbilt for the first time since Ronald Reagan was in office, had what we all expected to be a big blowout win over South Carolina this past Saturday. Well, that is not what happened at all. South Carolina gave Alabama a fit. They led the game in the fourth quarter. And then, even when Bama took the lead, South Carolina nearly forced overtime. They scored a touchdown, and if they'd converted the two-point conversion, they would have tied it and sent the game to overtime. They didn't. Alabama survives. That doesn't mean it's all good, though, because South Carolina committed 4 turnovers, and they still almost won the game. So Alabama has now struggled in back-to-back weeks, and now they have number 11 Tennessee. They still have number 19 Missouri. They still have number 8 LSU up next. Hey, Alabama's defense, yeah, it's been a little shaky. And the offense has been a little sloppy. Hey, maybe quarterback Jalen Milroe, maybe he's just not healthy because he has been banged up. But is it time to panic in Tuscaloosa? This is a tough one. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say this. Keep that panic button handy. Like, keep it on your desk. Because I do actually think Vanderbilt is probably way better than anyone expected. And then I think Alabama was kind of on a hangover from that game this past Saturday against South Carolina. But I want you to think about one thing. So far, Alabama has played exactly one good half of SEC football. Remember that first half against Georgia? That's it. That seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? But over the next 3 weeks, if Bama struggles again, yeah, go ahead and start mashing that panic button. I'm not quite ready to say they should panic yet, but it's getting a little bit scary. Staying in the SEC, what about the other powerhouse? What about the Georgia Bulldogs? Well, Georgia lost that game to Alabama like 3 weeks ago. And while they have now won back-to-back games, the way they went down to Alabama 30-7 in that game has Georgia fans kind of gripping right now. In fact, Georgia fans got so bad that head coach Kirby Smart took offense at his home fans. He told them they need to be louder when the opponent has the ball, and they need to bring more positive energy in general. So should Georgia be panicking right now? No. They still might be the best team in college football on any given Saturday, but they do have a few concerns besides, you know, just their street driving. There are times that the Georgia offense stalls. They don't have the offensive playmakers that they have had in the past. Now, those may develop. We're starting to see hints of big-time playmakers, but they're not quite there yet. Not like what they've had in years past. But here's the other side to Georgia that is a little concerning. That defense is giving up big passing yards. And if you look at their stats, you go, what are you talking about, Clint? They're allowing like 200 yards per game, but they allowed nearly 400 to Alabama and 300 to Mississippi State. Bad news, Mississippi State isn't very good. Next up for Georgia, yeah, number 1, Texas. Then they still have Ole Miss. Then they still have Tennessee. Hey, those are some very dangerous offenses coming. Georgia doesn't need to panic yet. They don't. They're fine. They're going to still be very, very dangerous. But that defense had better come around. The USC Trojans had high hopes going into the season, but those hopes have been dashed and dashed hard. Do you realize the Trojans are now just 3-3, and they kind of had to get creative on Saturday to lose to Penn State? Because USC led 20-6 at halftime. They ended up losing 33-30. But you know what? This isn't even about that game. This is about USC in general. In their last four games, they've allowed 26 points per game. That is way too many. And we know where this all goes back to, right? Lincoln Riley coach teams get punched in the mouth and they slink off and hide. So if there's a panic button, USC fan, mash that panic button. This isn't going anywhere, and USC has to address this at some point. You know, they thought by bringing in D'Anton Lynn to be the defensive coordinator, maybe that would toughen them up. It hasn't. USC right now is at DEFCON 1. Mash the panic button. We finish off our panic rankings this week in college football, and we're going to finish not with a team, but with an entire conference. Because should the Big 12 begin to panic? Remember, going into this season, the Big 12 was looking at Utah and Arizona and Kansas State and Oklahoma State, and they're all major contenders in this conference. Right now, most of those schools are at the bottom of the league standings, aside from Kansas State. But Kansas State also has a blowout loss on their record. Get this, right now, the top of the Big 12 is as follows. BYU, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Arizona State, and then Cincinnati. Should fans of the Big 12 panic? Because this league does not look as good as promised. Well, I don't know if you need to panic yet, but here's the problem. We know the SEC and the Big Ten are absolutely stacked. The Big 12 needs BYU or Iowa State or Texas Tech, someone to run the table, and that won't be easy. But here is the concern for the Big 12. Right now, the way this is shaping up, you've got a legit chance to get one team in the playoff, and that could be it. You might not get any more than that. The Big 12 needs a strong finish to this season. Okay, but let's move over to the NFL. And we have a number of teams that had high hopes going into the season. Now they've hit maybe a tough game or two, and we're not quite sure, is this a one-week thing, or should these teams begin to panic? Let's start off with the Buffalo Bills. They started the season strong. They got a big win on Monday night over the New York Jets, and now they pick up wide receiver Amari Cooper. But the Bills have shown an inability to beat the top teams just in their own conference. Remember, their two losses are to Baltimore and Houston. They kind of lost the same way. The defense was unable to stop the run, and the offense was unable to keep up. Well, I like the addition of Amari Cooper to this team a lot, but the defense has to step up. And the Bills really need that running game back. When they had James Cook healthy, it was looking better. That was taking some of the pressure off of that defense. But without Cook in the lineup, Buffalo kind of needs Josh Allen to be their best runner, too. That could be a recipe for trouble. No, Buffalo doesn't need to panic. They'll be fine. Shore up a few areas and get some people back. Von Miller would be nice. James Cook would be nice. Buffalo will at least be in the hunt. However, we now move to the Miami Dolphins. It is past time to panic. You are at DEFCON 1. We were all thinking, going into the season, hey, the Dolphins might be that kind of sneaky candidate, not only to be a playoff contender, maybe they could be like a title contender. Okay, so they beat Jacksonville in the opener, looking good. And then they played those Bills in week two, and starting quarterback Tua Tagovailoa was flopping and twitching again. Well, now the Dolphins have lost three of their last four. And yes, like I said, it is beyond time to panic. Now, the Dolphins say they expect Tua to play again this year. And maybe he will. But that doesn't help in the here and the now, because Tyler Huntley, Skylar Thompson, Tim Boyle, David Woodley, Don Strock, whoever, they've all looked terrible. And the bigger question is, when Tua does come back, how in the world is that going to look? Are we literally going to have like a death watch cam on this dude? It's going to be scary. I'm not even trying to be funny. It's going to be scary. The Dolphins can jump up and down on the panic button right now. No questions asked. Next up, the Cincinnati Bengals are a really odd case. I'm not quite sure what to make of them just yet, because they started the season painfully slow at just 1-4. Then they even struggled this last weekend to beat the Giants and get their second win. But hey, we've seen the Bengals start slow, then they rally, then they get going. But here's where I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, you can go ahead and panic. Because through these first six games, Joe Burrow is playing really, really well. He has 12 touchdown passes. He has just two interceptions. He's completing nearly 72% of his passes. He can't play much better. But the real concern is the Bengals' defense. They're allowing 25 points per game. They're getting pushed around up front. In addition, I know we say this every year, they aren't protecting Joe Burrow that well. Right now, that offensive line has allowed Joe Burrow to be sacked more than enough times. He's on track to be sacked over 40 times this year. Again, it just doesn't bode well for the Bengals. I think they'll be dangerous. I think they're still a really good football team. And on any given week, they can literally beat anyone. But the way they've started and the way the defense looks, no, I think Cincinnati would be right to panic right now. Let's jump over to the NFC. And let's start with a team coming off the worst loss of this past weekend. And yes, I'm talking about those Dallas Cowboys, who were taken to the woodshed by the Detroit Lions to the tune of 47-9. Well, Dallas is now sitting at 3-3. And on Sunday, they allowed the Lions offense to rack up 500 yards while turning the ball over five times. Honestly, we're lucky it wasn't worse. You know, it has always felt like Jerry Jones was that meddling owner. He was always kind of trying to tinker, find ways to win, didn't care what he had to spend, didn't care what he had to do. He just wanted to win. Honestly, I don't even think he knows where he is anymore. He's just up in the owner's box, eating a corn dog, facing the restroom door. He has no idea there's even a game going on. Panic, Cowboys fans, because this team is about to be scorched earth. Everyone's contract is expiring, and you can see, for whatever reason, this team hates each other. Oh, and by the way, next up on the schedule, Niners, Falcons, Eagles. Yeah, Cowboys fans should be doing jumping jacks on the panic button. Speaking of the Eagles got a really ugly win on Sunday. In more ways than one. First, they barely beat the awful Cleveland Browns 20-16. Despite Deshaun Watson and the Browns offense only putting up a little over 200 yards. But we're not done. Because after the game, Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni was arguing with home Philly fans who are booing him. I understand the Eagles are 3-2, but this hasn't been pretty. Should the Eagles begin to panic? Well, I'm going to say hold off for just a little bit. But again, there are concerns. Quarterback Jalen Hurts, he's kind of regressing. He isn't getting through his reads. He isn't throwing the ball accurately. Also, the defense is allowing probably more yardage than they would like. Now, maybe this Sirianni stuff bonds the Eagles. They kind of pull together and they say, hey, our coach has our back. Or maybe they just look around the locker room again and go, you know what? This guy really is an idiot. So Philly doesn't need to panic, but they need to start figuring things out real soon. We finish off our Should They Panic segment in the NFL with the defending NFC champion, San Francisco 49ers, who are now sitting at just 3-3. You know, the Niners are really just Super Bowl or bust every single year right now. But is it time to panic? And I'm going to say no, but I understand if you feel nervous. Because, you know, we look at the talent on that team, and you just kind of pencil them in. Oh, they're going to win 11, 12, 13 games. They just have so much talent. But you do sometimes need a little luck because you need to stay healthy. And the Niners have been really banged up this year. Christian McCaffrey is still hurt. A lot of guys are nursing bumps and bruises. Ricky Pearsall is, well, rehabbing his gunshot wound. But when you are the first place team, you get no rest. Next up for San Fran, Kansas City, then Dallas. Okay, easy week. Tampa, Seattle, Green Bay, Buffalo. Hey, the Niners need to get healthy. If they can do that, yeah, they're going to still be fine. But sometimes it's easier said than done. Because while they're still trying to get healthy, get guys back on the field, the guys on the field might be going back out. San Francisco needs just a little bit of luck to get back on track. No need to panic yet, but they need a little help. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like we talked about at the top, the Major League Baseball playoffs had now advanced to the League Championship Series. And right now, the number one seed in each league is still alive. Yes, the Los Angeles Dodgers won 98 games this year. They were the National League number one seed. The New York Yankees won 94 games, and they were the number one seed over on the American side. Now, they won't say it, but we all know. The MLB front offices, they are praying that those two teams advance to the World Series. Los Angeles versus New York, massive fan bases, crazy talent on both teams. Don't get me wrong, a Subway Series between the Mets and the Yanks probably wouldn't hurt their feelings, but it would just be East Coast. New York versus LA? Oh yeah, they would love that. In fact, if this was the NBA, they'd make that happen. They just might have a, you know, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Lakers kind of reffing night. Because you get both coasts, you get both fan bases. This would be huge. However, it is actually not that common for both number one seeds to make it all the way to the World Series. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down the last five times that both number one seeds did make it to the World Series. So let's just see how rare this actually is. We start off at number five, and we actually don't have to go back that far to the last time both number one seeds made it to the World Series, because it was just back in 2020, the last time it happened. However, that might be a little bit misleading, because remember 2020? Do you remember that awful year? The 2020 Major League Baseball season didn't begin until July 23rd. It ended on September 27th. There were only 60 games because we had the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, the Tampa Bay Rays went 40-20, and the Los Angeles Dodgers were 43-17, and they were the two number one seeds. Hey, don't get me wrong. They were both very good teams. So in the playoffs, the Rays beat Toronto, then they beat the Yankees, then they beat the Astros. They advanced to the World Series. Meanwhile, the Dodgers beat Milwaukee, they swept the Padres, they beat the Braves, and in the World Series between the Rays and the Dodgers, the games were actually played at a neutral site in Arlington, Texas, without fans. You know, you look back at that COVID stuff, and it really is kind of mind-blowing. But in the World Series itself, the Dodgers would go on to win the title in six games. Dodgers shortstop Corey Seager would win the series MVP. It was the Dodgers' first title since 1988. Now, does it have an asterisk next to it with the COVID stuff? Yeah, it kind of does. But the Dodgers did beat the top seed in the American League when they beat Tampa Bay in 2020. And that comes in on our list today at number five. So we go to the next last time that two number one seeds made it to the World Series. And this time, we have to go clear back to the year 2013. David Ortiz was crushing the ball for the Boston Red Sox. They would win 97 games and have the best record in the AL. Adam Wainwright was throwing some serious heat for the St. Louis Cardinals. They would also win 97 games and earn the top spot in the National League. But I mean, that Boston team was just so loaded. They had Ortiz. They had John Lester. Jacob Ellsbury. They just had so much. And so Boston cruised through the playoffs. They were barely tested. The Cardinals had a little more trouble. They had to scrape past the Pirates. Then they beat the Dodgers and made it to the World Series. But in the World Series, the Red Sox just had too much talent. They would split the first four games 2-2, but then Boston got going. They rolled into the title in six games. But the Boston Red Sox facing the St. Louis Cardinals back in 2013 comes in today on our list at number four. So we reached number three. And remember, we've already gone back over 10 years to get to the last two times we've seen the top seeds make it to the World Series. Now we have to go back quite a bit further, because we go back 25 years to the 1999 season where the New York Yankees were rolling. They had won the title in 96, they had won the title in 98, and they were primed to win it again. Hey, they had Derek Jeter, Tino Martinez, David Cone, Bernie Williams. The Yankees were just completely dominant. They won 98 games and were the top seed in the American League. Well, the Atlanta Braves, they're pretty good in their own right. The Braves won 107 games with guys like Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones and Brian Jordan and that ridiculous pitching staff of guys like Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, and John Smoltz. So both teams cruised to the World Series. They never even faced an elimination game. And we got number one versus number one in 99. But then we got an absolute dud of a series. The Yankees were just too much. They swept the Braves in four straight games by a combined score of 21-9. Hey, they can't all be zingers, but the Yankees facing the Braves in 99 comes in today on our list at number three. So we reached number two. And we go just 4 years prior to 99, back in 95. And remember that the 94 MLB season had been canceled completely because of the player strike. But the Toronto Blue Jays had won back-to-back titles in 92 and 93. Then 94, the season was lost. Okay, well, what would Toronto do in 95? They would do nothing. They finished dead last in their division. Instead, the Cleveland Indians had actually built quite a squad with Kenny Lofton, Manny Ramirez, Omar Vizquel, Albert Bell, Jim Thome. They won 100 games. They were the top seed in the AL. In the National League, we would get a very familiar team. The Atlanta Braves dominated the 90s. They went to the World Series five times, but they only won it once. Well, this was it. The Braves used that nasty pitching lineup of Maddux, Smoltz, and Tom Glavine to control that series over a talented Cleveland team. They won it in six games. Glavine would be named the series MVP, but considering the talent on that Braves team, it's kind of scary to think, what if they hadn't won this one? They would be like the Buffalo Bills of baseball. But the Braves got it done against the Indians in 95, and that comes in at number two. So we reach the number one last time the MLB World Series saw both number one seeds in it, and we have to go clear back to the year 1992. George Herbert Walker Bush was in office. Basic Instinct was showing, well, kind of a different side to Sharon Stone. And Whitney Houston said she would always love us. We had no idea that Bobby Brown was going to ruin her. And we had no idea that we were witnessing anything special in the World Series. But once again, we had the Atlanta Braves, although they were still pretty young and not quite as powerful as they would be. They won the NL with 98 wins. And we had those Toronto Blue Jays I mentioned earlier with John Olerud, Roberto Alomar, and of course, Dave Winfield. And yes, Joe Carter. The Blue Jays won 96 games in 92. They rolled to the playoffs and into the World Series. And after they lost game one, the Blue Jays won games two, three, and four with that nasty pitching staff of Jack Morris, David Cone, and David Wells. They actually outshined the Braves pitchers, which is pretty impressive when you think about it. The Blue Jays would eventually close out the Braves in six games. You know, going back over 30 years, the number one seeds from both leagues have made it to the World Series only five times. Hey, MLB has a chance this year to see it happen again with the Yankees and Dodgers. But as you can see from our list today, it doesn't happen very often. And even when it does, there's actually no guarantee that the World Series is going to be all that entertaining with a one versus one. Again, we talked about it at the top of the show, styles make for great matchups, and great matchups make for a great series. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will, of course, be keeping you up on all that is going on in the world of sports. And you know, we might have to do something we haven't done in a while. That's right, kids. We just might have to make you a little bit of money. So make sure you tune into The Dose and make sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, always know you can email the podcast dailydosesports@gmail.com. I actually heard from a number of people just over the last few weeks. Always good to hear from listeners. So feel free to reach out. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for stopping by dailydosesports.com and checking out what we have going on over there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?